that time, we had to deal with court, lawyers, CPS, and CASA. My mother had a chance to stop doing drugs and to get better. That way we would have been able to go back home with her. She didn't, and that shows you how addictive drugs can be. I stayed with my immediate family until it was the last day of school. My grandparents and my aunt came to get my sister and me. Ever since that day, I've been living with my grandparents, who have adopted me and my siblings. During all this, I felt hurt, embarrassed, and scared. I would not want anyone to go through a situation like mine. That is why I will stay away from drugs and vapes. I will never do drugs in my life. I don't want to end up like my birth mother. She lost her kids, her friends, and herself. I don't want to lose the people that I love and care about because of drugs. Book takes a look at George H.W. Bush by Michael Bauer. George H.W. Bush lived in a lot of different places in his lifetime. The 41st president was born in Milton, Massachusetts, raised in Greenwich, Connecticut, and eventually made his way south to the Lone Star State. While Bush was widely hailed from Houston, his time spent in the Permian Basin area is something that played an important part in his life, according to author Charles Denyer. Denyer discusses Bush's time in West Texas with a biography titled Texas Titans, George H.W. Bush and James A. Baker III, A Friendship Forged in Power. The book, which talks about Bush's relationship with one of his closest friends and right-hand man, James Baker, will be released next month. Denyer, who lives in Austin, says that West Texas is where it all started for Bush and his family. Well, if you think about it, here's a man who came in from the East Coast and arrives with a unique vernacular, Denyer said. Cowboy boots, barbecue, and everything that was Texan was so foreign to him. West Texas truly was a whole new country for Bush. After graduating from Yale in 1948, Bush and his family moved to Odessa. He was transferred to Compton, California for a short time in 1949, before the family moved back to West Texas in 1950, to Midland. Coming in from the East Coast wasn't easy for Bush and his wife Barbara. However, Denyer said, the people in the Permian Basin embraced them and believed in them. He became a true Texan, not so much through Houston, but it started the Odessa-Midland area, Denyer said. Bush started off working as an oil field equipment salesman for Dresser Industries. In 1951, Bush and John Overby launched the Bush Overby Oil Development Company. In 1953, he co-founded the Zapata Petroleum Corporation. While living in the Permian Basin, the Bushes raised their family, including 43rd President George W. Bush, who was born in New Haven, Connecticut, in 1946, but attended public schools in Midland. Their sons John, Jeb, Neil, and Marvin were born in Midland. Their daughter Robin was born in California. In 1954, he was named president of the Zapata Offshore Company, which was a subsidiary that specialized in offshore drilling. In Denyer's book, he explained that Bush proclaimed 1954 to be a good year for Zapata, with the company holding a one-third interest in 70 wells and 100 more wells to drill in 1955. It wasn't until 1959 when the subsidiary became independent, and Bush moved his family from Midland to Houston. Dorothy was born in Houston shortly after the transition. After becoming well acclimated in West Texas, Denyer explained that it wasn't an easy decision for the future president to pick up his family and move again, but that Bush knew what had to be done. Well, he was very comfortable in the Permian Basin, Denyer said, but he knew that he needed to be closer to the Gulf. So I think, personally, he agonized over it because he had been so accustomed to life in the Permian Basin. But he felt that he wanted to grow, and he wanted to grow his offshore company, and to do that he had to go to Houston. A passage from the book detailed Bush loved his life in Midland, but he acknowledged years later that Midland is nowhere near the Gulf of Mexico, where all our drilling rigs were operating. The rest is history. Bush would eventually venture into politics, serving as vice president under Ronald Reagan, before being elected president in 1988. His time as president saw a changing world, which included the fall of the Berlin Wall in 1989, the collapse of the Soviet Union in 1991, and the end of the Cold War, as well as the Persian Gulf War, just to name a few. I don't know of any other president in modern time that's been faced with such a cascade of events over 48 months, Denyer said. Those events completely changed the world. All the events were absolutely monumental and consequential. Bush handled them, I think, with the utmost expertise that you would ever find with any commander-in-chief. As Denyer discusses in his book, Baker was by Bush's side throughout all of the events that transpired during his single term in office as commander-in-chief. Baker was heavily involved in the many policy decisions that the United States would ultimately take, Denyer said. The Berlin Wall, the fall of communism, Baker was there by Bush's side and helped make decisions that would help impact the entire world. However, Bush's time in Odessa, Midland, is something that shouldn't be overlooked, Denyer said. What he found in Odessa and Midland were normal people, and I think that really resonated with him, Denyer said. I think it set the tone for who he was as a human being. He was a normal person and humble. A lot of those traits were ingrained in him when he moved to Odessa. Texas Titans will be available in hardcover, paperback, and ebook formats wherever books are sold on November 17th. Master Gardeners. Go Big or Go Home to Achieve the Outdoor Space You Want by Debbie Rowland, Master Gardener. Significant enclosure is one of the gardening rules that most outdoor designers use. Our little farm has 5 acres, and it was difficult to achieve that homey, cozy space I wanted. I finally decided I needed to have a separate space for each project. There are 2 fenced acres for the miniature donkeys, a fenced acre for my beloved chickens, 1 rooster and 27 hens, a fenced acre in the front for the dogs, and almost an acre for the house and backyard, vegetable gardens, outdoor living. The outdoor living space is bordered on the north side by a very large and tall shop, on the west side by our house with the south and east, enclosed by an 8-foot-tall metal fence. Inside that is a large covered patio, a pool, and a separate area of raised beds for vegetables. I was finally able to define an area as a significant enclosure. We need that feeling of being embraced by nature and having a place of refuge. Within that area, walkways are a wonderful addition to any planned area. Remember, 5 feet is the minimum width of a walkway for 2 people walking side by side. Hardscape is anything you use in your garden that is not alive. Several years ago, I realized that I didn't like the look of my yard. It was because everything was too small. Small pots, small statues. I started investing in large metal sculptures of birds, large fountains and pots. The difference is amazing. Go big or go home really is true. When we built our patio, we built a very large one which served several purposes. The large roof directs rainwater into my backyard, and it cuts down on the area that might otherwise be planted in grass, which would require water that I'm not willing to draw from the aquifer. When you plant your beds, always plant small plants in the front and large ones in the back, and don't just plant 3 of the same plant, plant in masses. 15 of the same plant will give you a look that pops. Last, it is always better to plant a 50-cent plant in a $5 hole than a $5 plant in a 50-cent hole. Always plant in amended soil by adding compost or your favorite amendment. Dig your hole 1.5 times wider than the width of the pot that the plant is currently living in. When you place the plant in the hole, do not plant it any deeper than it is in the pot. I do always loosen the soil at the bottom of the hole, to allow the roots easy access. For more information, call the AgriLife office at 498-4071 or at 686-4700 in Midland, or visit aggie-horticulture.tamu.edu or westtexasgardening.org. Aphid control and prevention. Jeanette Castanon is a horticulturist with Texas AgriLife Extension Service. She can be reached at 686-4700 or by email at jeanette.castanon, that's C-A-S-T-A-N-O-N, at ag.tamu.edu. Aphids are tiny insects with sucking mouth parts that they use to pierce into the vascular tissue of plants. Right now, you may be noticing their sticky substance all over your trees, especially if you have pecans. If you look at just the right angle, you will notice their honeydew rain. Honeydew is essentially their poop. When they tap into the vascular tissue, they are taking the sugary substance the plant is producing through photosynthesis. They are feeding constantly, and as they are eating, they are excreting, hence the rain. There are two main types of aphids, black margin aphids and black aphids. Black margin aphids are yellow-bodied and have black outlines on their wings. When black margin aphids feed, it is like you placing a straw in a drink and sucking. When black aphids feed, they release an enzyme that digests the plant tissue, and they then suck the digested plant material. The black aphid will cause more damage because they are breaking down the tissue. Easy at-home chemical treatment can be a mix of soap and water in a spray bottle. Neem oil is also great to use on aphids. Stronger active ingredients that you can use include any pyrethroid as well as the active ingredient malathion. For more information, call the AgriLife office at 498-4071 in Odessa or at 686-4700 in Midland. Email jeanette.castanon at ag.tamu.edu or visit aggie-horticulture.tamu.edu or West Texas Gardening.org.
Hello, this is April reading the Midland Reporter Telegram for Saturday, October 31, 2020. Ladybug single mom becomes family pet. Melody Nicholas. My son hopped into the car a few weeks ago after school, eager for me to meet his new friend. I teared up immediately. Had my precious introvert finally made a friend at his new school? Thank you, Jesus. This is my new friend, Paul, he exclaimed as he shot his right hand toward me. Oh, no. No, no, no. He is 12 years old. He cannot have an imaginary friend in the 6th grade. He will be ridiculed for the rest of his scholastic life. Isn't he cool? He asked while turning his wrist over. And there was Paul, a beautiful, shining red ladybug with bold black spots. Paul had landed on my son's arm earlier that day and just never flew away. Now any mother with good sense would have told her son to put Paul out the window right then and there. I, however, do not have good sense. My daughter was equally enthusiastic about Paul. On the drive home, the kids began to comb the internet for the supplies they would need to make Paul a home habitat. And before I knew what was happening, I too was swept up in their plans and began to fiercely scrub and triple rinse a lidded detergent container for Paul's new digs. Bodacious came inside and dropped an armful of sticks, leaves, small rocks, and acorns on the kitchen table. She's all wide-eyed and earnest about her endeavor. We want to have plenty of things inside the habitat. She pronounces each syllable very carefully, habitat, so Paul doesn't get bored, she told me. Now, I want the lid to stay on the habitat, but I don't want to suffocate Paul either. How to make air holes? I eye some scissors, but know that trying to puncture a thick cascade lid with fabric scissors will inevitably land me in the emergency room with a puncture wound. My son begins flinging open drawers and turns to me with the wine bottle opener. "Don't judge me. It's a big, old-fashioned winged corkscrew number made from enameled stainless steel. I've had it for 20 years. I descend some of the corkscrew and then plunge the business end into that lid. Poke, poke, poke. Works like a charm. Next, we load our mini forest into the container. Then I wonder, how are we supposed to feed Paul? Ladybugs are carnivores. Who knew? They eat aphids, the tiny little soft bugs that infest gardens and pets. In a pinch, ladybugs also like sweet stuff, like honey and raisins. Well, I was not about to attempt an aphid harvest in the front yard, so I added a dollop of honey to a water bottle lid for Paul's dinner. You also can't just leave ladybugs a bowl of water. They have a tendency to drown. So we added a damp paper towel to our habitat, let Paul crawl in by walking down a stick, and put the lid on tight. I was worried that all the activity and touching might stress him out. I told my kids to leave him alone and turn out the overhead lights. When the Hubs came home, he told our son we could keep Paul for just a few days, but that Paul would need to go back to school on Monday so he could hunt bugs and get married to a Mrs. Paul, like a normal ladybug. But, as often happens at my house, a few days turned into a week. We didn't mean for it to, but it was so nice to see my son have something to play with. Starting a new school was hard for him this year, and Paul became a bit of a cheer-in after our afternoons. Paul is a champion gamer, and really knows how to tickle the ivories during piano practice. He wasn't much on conversation, but Paul was an amazing listener. I stayed busy changing out his paper toweling and soaking raisins in water to soften them up for Paul's wee mandibles. But after a week, I suspected keeping Paul with us wasn't fair, and Paul was probably ready for some meat. I told my son we had to take Paul back tomorrow. Just before bedtime, my son came into my office. "We can't take Paul back tomorrow," he said. But I was prepared for this. It's how I ended up with another dog after emphatically saying, "No more dogs." I carefully explained that Paul was probably very hungry, that Paul needed to be with his own kind. I said I knew it felt like we were doing a good thing, but we weren't doing the right thing for Paul. He looked so sad, but I could not, would not, give in. "You don't understand, Mom. I think Paul is a girl. And he has laid eggs on the top of his box." I went to see for myself. Sure enough, there was a string of little yellow eggs on Paul's ceiling. Gross! Did you know ladybugs are actually beetles? Well, I didn't until we started this little experiment. Suddenly, I had visions of beetles swarming out of the habitat, staining the walls with their bug stuff, and crawling all over the kitchen counters. No way, Jose. It was time to evict Paul. As I laid in bed that night, I couldn't help but put myself in Paul's shoes. Paul was a single mom, with no one to help her or provide for her babies. And I read that the larvae would eat their unhatched egg mates if there were no aphids to feed upon. I could not be responsible for ladybug aside. I just couldn't. The next day, I did a little internet research and found a top bug man, Charlie Koneman. Charlie specializes in urban entomology and is an insect diagnostician for the Plant Disease and Insect Diagnostic Laboratory at Oklahoma State University. He wasn't in his office, but his assistant, who took pity on my call of woe, gave me his email address. I sent him a picture of the egg-encrusted detergent lid and told him all about Paul. "Dear Charlie, we don't know what to do. We will be devastated if we kill them all. With that said, I also do not want a ladybug colony in my son's room. Please tell me what to do. There are only about 10 eggs so far. 2020 just keeps getting weirder." God love Charlie. He wrote me back that night. Hi, Melanie. The primary food source for lady beetles are aphids, so rearing them from egg to adult is difficult. If you place them outside, they will overwinter as eggs and hatch in the spring. Some overwinter as adults as well. I would set them out away from the house and let nature take over. Next spring, when you see lady beetle larvae or adults, you can always say those probably came from the eggs. Sigh. Charlie understands. Truth tempered with hope. I suspect he would do a much better job explaining Santa Claus to children than I did. The next day, the kids and I tromped outside with our habitat and said our farewells. We wished Paul good luck and nestled his box into some grass next to a tree. I haven't been back to inspect the lid or count Paul's eggs again. I choose to believe that, like me, Paul and the babies will hunker down for the winter, then rise in spectacular fashion for the spring. And whenever we see ladybugs outside, I will tell my children what a tremendous thing they did for Paul. Everybody wins. And if anyone needs to explain the Santa thing next month, hit me up. I will send you Charlie's email address. You can see Paul, the eggs, and his habitat on Facebook at Melanie Maxi Nicholas or on Instagram at Real Melanie Nicholas. Melanie Nicholas is a full-time mama and writer. She and the Hubs have two children, Parksalot, 12, and Bodacious, 9. You can follow her amazing adventures fighting grime and insecurity on Facebook, Instagram, and at MelanieNicholas.com. Dear Abby, man is disinclined to meet with his newfound half-sisters. Dear Abby, my father, who has been gone for 40 years, had many good qualities, and he provided well for our family. I loved him and treasure many of the memories I have of my time with him. However, his deep-seated lechery overwhelmed his life and destroyed what might have been an idyllic 50s youth for me. It caused great pain and embarrassment to my mother, my sister, and me. I recently received communication from four different half-sisters I didn't know of who discovered our kinship through DNA tracking. I am indisposed to a reunion. I may have felt differently at one time, but I am 81 now. I no longer travel and am leaning more toward releasing relationships than making new ones. My wife has had a stroke, so we pretty much confine our entertaining to our children and grandchildren. I deeply regret any pain my father's libidinous nature has caused, but I am not inclined to spend time dealing with the results of his affairs. I don't want to be cold. They seem nice, but it's too late in the game for me. Do you agree? Ancient History. Dear History, I do agree. Because your father's flings caused you, your mother, and your sister pain and embarrassment, I see no reason for you to engage with these individuals if you don't wish to. That said, if they have questions about your father's medical history that could be relevant to them, consider providing the answers. Dear Abby, my brother and his wife have been married for 40 years. They moved out of state 10 years ago. We no longer get together for holidays, and the only time I talk to my brother is when it concerns our parents, whom I take care of. 2 years ago, my sister-in-law informed me that she never really cared for me and has issues with my family. When I asked her why, she accused me of being a liar. I don't know why she feels this way. I talked to my brother about it, and his answer was vague. Although my sister-in-law has issues, she still wants to exchange birthday and Christmas presents. I'm finding it difficult to purchase a gift for someone who doesn't care for me. Is there a nice way to say I no longer want to exchange gifts and would rather we just exchange cards? I don't want to cause another family feud. Curtailing in California. Dear Curtailing, you should have stopped the gift exchange 2 years ago when your sister-in-law told you she had never really cared for you. Tell your brother you no longer feel the joy in it that you did before his wife told you what she did, and that you would prefer to send cards from now on. Don't worry about causing another family feud. Your family is already fractured, and I doubt that once your parents are gone, he and his wife will be sticking around. So don't be surprised when it happens. You are a good daughter, and you have my sympathy. Dear readers, tonight is Halloween. I hope that any celebration you have is creative, fun, and safe in accordance with the guidelines and conditions in your location. Happy Halloween, everyone. In addition, daylight saving time ends at 2 a.m. Sunday. Don't forget to turn your clocks back 1 hour at bedtime tonight. And while you're at it, be sure to change the batteries in your fire alarms and smoke detectors. Love, Abby. For everything you need to know about wedding planning, order How to Have a Lovely Wedding. Send your name and mailing address, plus check or money order for $8, U.S. funds, to Dear Abby, Wedding Booklet, P.O. Box 447, Mount Morris, Illinois, 61054-0447. Shipping and handling are included in the price.
Thank you for joining us for this week's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American Sunday Lifestyle sections. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.
Next on Recording Library of West Texas Radio, Far West Texas News, followed by the Midland Reporter Telegram and Odessa American at 8. This week on the Recording Library of West Texas Radio's Saturday Night Movie, Sandra Bullock stars in The Blind Side.
I'm not cutting, I'm just asking. Let me tell you something, all right? We have been sitting around here for over an hour, and when I look around, all I see are people shooting the bull and drinking coffee.
How can I help you?
Oh, he was first.
No, you go ahead. I think I want to hear this.
Me too.
You all right?
Excuse me?
You right? How those words taste coming out of your mouth?
Mike Vinegar.
Who is that, SJ?
Big Mike. He goes to high school here.
What is he wearing? It's below freezing.
Do you have any place to stay tonight? Don't you dare lie to me.
Was this a bad idea?
What's the big deal? It's just for one night. It is just for one night, right, Leanne?
Tell me just one thing I should know about you.
Well, that's a good call, Big Mike.
Leanne, is this another one of your charities?
We need to find out more about his past.
He's been enrolled in 7 different institutions. His grade point average begins with 0.
He needs to do better in school.
I'd love to work with him.
This is mine?
Yes, sir.
Never had one before.
What, a room to yourself?
A bed.
Michael's grades have improved enough that he can go out for spring football.
How's he doing?
I haven't quite gotten the hang of it yet.
It's all real nice what you're doing, but don't be surprised if one day you wake up and he gone.
I heard you got your new mama now. She's fine, too.
Michael was here.
Tell him to sleep with one eye open.
You threatened my son. You threatened me.
Sandra Bullock.
We're in the middle of practice, Leanne.
You can thank me later.
His team is your family, Michael. You have to protect him. Tony here is your quarterback. You protect his blind side. When you look at him, you think of me.
Yes, ma'am.
SJ, you're going to want to get this.
Mike's the best left tackle I've seen in years.
You're changing that boy's life.
No. He's changing mine.
The Blind Side.
I said you could thank me later. It's later, Bert.
Quentin Aaron, Sandra Bullock, and Tim McGraw star in the audio-described The Blind Side, Saturday night at 7 on Recording Library of West Texas Radio.
Now, here's your forecast for the Midland-Odessa area. It's 45 and clear. Tonight, partly cloudy with a low in the upper 50s. Then, tomorrow, clear with a high in the mid-70s. Tomorrow night, clear with a low in the upper 50s. From the Recording Library of West Texas 24-Hour Weather Center, I'm Maria Lopez.
Coronavirus updates, weekdays at 1.
This is the Recording Library of West Texas. It's 7 a.m.
Welcome to this week's edition of Far West Texas. Readings from the Big Bend Sentinel, the Monahans News, and the Fort Stockton Pioneer. read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hello, this is Mike.